Hello and welcome to The Herd Has Spoken, a podcast brought to you by Muskox Men's Apparel.
Hey guys, Brad Hoos here, your host of The Herd Has Spoken. Really excited to have you join me for today's episode, episode number 27 with Chad Lubinsky. Chad is an accomplished ultra marathon runner, although he does consider himself to be a mediocre endurance athlete. We'll get into that in today's episode. But what I really love about Chad is his journey to becoming ultra marathon runner and what he's learned about himself, his life, and his approach to the outdoors from challenging himself repeatedly, time and time again, and spending so much time outdoors. So I'm really excited about Chad's discussion today. I'm really proud to have Chad on the podcast as well. Chad's a huge supporter of Muskox. Right before we started the podcast, he went into talking about his love for the Charleston, how important it was for him as part of his journey on the Colorado Trail recently. So if you haven't yet done it, checked out Muskox for yourself, do yourself a favor, go to GoMuskox.com and check out everything you may need for your next adventure. So with no further ado, my conversation with Chad Lubinsky. Chad Lubinsky, welcome to The Herd Has Spoken.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It's an honor to be out here.
Well, I guess in here.
I like you thinking out there in terms of the outdoors. That doesn't surprise me. And we'll get into all your outdoor adventures, but I want to start by understanding, how does a cheese in Oregon compare to cheese in Wisconsin?
Oh gosh. So I will say this. Okay. So, you know, cheese curds in Wisconsin are like a super big thing, right? And cause you guys are based in Michigan, right?
We are. Yes.
Yeah. So like you kind of know this stuff, right? So cheese curds are way better in Wisconsin, but I will say there is a Tillamook cheese factory out on the coast in Oregon that I'm not going to lie, it kind of rivals some of the Wisconsin cheeses. I don't think they got the whole smorgasbord, you know, but it definitely comes pretty close. It's like some high quality cheese. It's good stuff. But, you know, Wisconsin always has my heart. So
I love it. So yeah. you grew up in Wisconsin, found yourself out to the Pacific Northwest, and now you're doing all sorts of crazy adventures. So we'll certainly get into your story a little bit and how you got out to the Pacific Northwest. But would love to hear, just for those people who are listening who may not be familiar with it, what is an ultra marathon?
Yes. So an ultra marathon is technically considered anything after a marathon. So what is it? 26.2 miles, right? So basically it can range from a 50K, which is about 31.1 miles. That's usually like kind of the starting point for an ultra. And then it goes up to a 50 miler, a 100K, which I think is like high sixties. And then usually the most popular ones are like the 100 milers. So that's like what everybody kind of at least that's what I'm striving to get to, I think. They even go past that. There's like a Bigfoot 200 up at Rainier, which is nuts. But for me, I think, you know, for the ultra scene, I want to get up to that 100 mile race for sure. And I think that's even kind of when I would consider myself really an ultra marathoner. I think that's like the kind of the gold standard for me, I think. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe you've already sort of unpacked this. I know you are a self-described mediocre endurance athlete, but
I did say that to say, yeah.
But yet you have run ultra marathon. So what to you would you consider to be a strong endurance athlete? Because to me, I'm like, wow, like I feel like you're already there, but obviously the bar is just really high in your world.
Yeah, you know, I think it happens too, because I was actually just listening to this podcast where this guy has run like all these 100-mile ultra marathons, you know, and like does several like tons in a year, like with like a 6:30 pace. And I'm just like, wow. Like, so when I think about myself compared to that, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, like this just seems so crazy. But yeah, for me, You know, I think once I get to that 100 mile, that's when you actually get like a little belt buckle with it and all this kind of cool rad stuff. I think that's where I really consider myself as an endurance athlete. I guess whenever I conquer something, I kind of just keep putting the bar a little bit further. And because I kind of create a kind of a longer takeoff pad, if you will, you know? And so I keep kind of just reaching and striving and knowing that I can do better. So yeah, I guess that's a long answer, but yeah, I don't know.
So if I told you the Bigfoot 200 was in your future, would that surprise you at all, knowing that you always want to go like one step further?
You know, possibly. I don't know if I want to go past the 100, because 100 to me is like, okay, that's like, okay, I'm pretty good with that. Like if I do 100, that sounds pretty cool. I think from there, I would probably transition to finding something a little bit different, maybe like a bike across America sort of thing or something like that. Like a little bit of an endurance, because that's a lot of running.
It's a lot training for this of stuff, running.
Yeah. It's like, you know, when I was training for my 50, there was a couple training runs where I actually had to run like a trail marathon, right? You know? And so I'd run these marathons or whatever. And then I was kind of an idiot, cause I get home and I realized I only ran 26.1. So I had to do the other 0.2 when I got home. So I'm like in my Crocs and I'm like laying down and I'm just like kind of dead. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't run the other 0.1. So I like got out, got my watch, ran out, did the 0.1 in my Crocs. You know, my neighbors are like, what is going on? Just going back and forth down the street and stuff. And, but you know, it's a lot of running. It's a lot of commitment. It's not, you know, there's been people that, you know, can do it without no training, but they're severely like injured afterwards, you know, for weeks and weeks on end. But for me, I like to really prepare, and it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time. You're just running, you know?
So, yeah. That is one of the hardest parts about any sort of endurance or just, you know, long, yeah. Again, I'm thinking of an Ironman or something of the equivalent. Yeah. It just takes a lot of time to train, which doesn't always gel well with having a full-time job, frankly.
Yes, exactly. And that's actually, I'm glad you brought up the Ironman, because that is something I would be interested in after the 100. So yeah, we'll see. I will say this. I don't think that I'm particularly like skillful in anything really. I think that I just can like deal with sucky stuff or sucky situations for a longer period of time, more than most people. And that's kind of like a muscle, right? Like the more you do it,
right,
definitely the easier it kind of becomes and the more you actually weirdly like crave of it. So it's just weird. I think I've always been like that. When I was even like a little kid, I would like my dad would throw me the football or whatever, and I'd always be like, hey, do it more challenging. I want it more challenging, right? Or something like that. Or I remember we had like 40 acres back home in Wisconsin, and you know, I was a little kid, so I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but like I just wanted to like chop down this tree. I was like 12 or like 14 or something. I was like, and it took me, I just remember it like took me forever to do this, but I was like just having so much fun. I don't know. It's a weird, weird kind of thing, I think.
Yes. So I'm curious to what extent this desire to like train and do one step beyond what you've already done, like how is that reflected in your personality? So I would guess, right, and I'm curious if this is correct or way off base here, that you might be more of a perfectionist, right? In that, like, yeah. Hey, I ran the 26 miles, but I didn't run the 26.2, or I ran 26.1. And I'm missing that 0.1. Like, I got to go finish that. So, how does like your training fit with your personality?
Yeah, I'm very type A. Like, I'm very disciplined. Like, just with, I guess, everything. Everything that I do, like every morning looks the same for me, you know, like wake up, water with salt, with lemon, with do my mobility, you know, and intermittent fat, you know, everything is like the same. Right. And so when it comes to training, it's easy to take that because it's already in my daily life, and it's easy to take it into training and still train when I don't feel like training or like I have to cram it in somewhere. And so I make sacrifices, which, to me is worth it, but I've been doing that for years. So it's kind of like, you know, it's just, it, again, that's kind of like a muscle too. And so, yeah, I definitely have a perfectionist attitude, which I've kind of, you know, can be a bad thing too at some points, right? Like, you kind of gotta, there's kind of gotta be a balance there too, because you don't want to burn yourself out when you're training for a 100-mile marathon or ultra marathon, because it's a lot of training and you get sick of it month one out of, you know, like a 6-month training plan, you know, that can be tough. So I try to balance that a little bit more, and I try to, and that's something that through hiking has actually helped me with, is being so type A, I'm on an itinerary, right? Cause I don't want to get fired from work when I'm like, I gotta get this done by the time, you know, so I can fly home and like get back to work. And so I have like this tight itinerary, and when I don't make that, which often occurs because so many variables come up with through hiking,
right?
You can try to account for, but you never account for all of them. And so that's kind of helped me pull back that type A a little bit and learn to adapt a little bit more and take things as it is.
Yeah, I always say that our biggest strength is often our biggest weakness, right? Or our weaknesses are our strengths, yeah, gone too far. And that's fascinating.
Yeah.
That you kind of been able to channel some of that in the outdoors and be able to learn a little bit about yourself. How do you feel like you've been able to change and evolve off trail based upon some of those learnings in terms of what you've done on the trail?
Oh yeah. That's a great question. Really good question. The trail is like a gratitude reset. Number one, when you are, you know, you don't shower for 11 days, you don't have, you know, good food. So you're not eating that healthy. It's all processed shit that I never eat in real life, you know? And you have to filter your water every day. You're sleeping in a tent, you're sleeping on the ground, and stuff like that. And so when you get home, actually, it's super interesting, because one of the bigger lessons that I learned is to really just be grateful for what I have. It's so nice. You have right? service again. You're like, oh my God, I can be on Instagram. You don't have to conserve your battery anymore. It's like, it's mind blowing. And so for like the first few weeks after trail, I really am in this real good gratitude mindset. I wish I could say that lasts forever, but it doesn't, at least for me. Every time I go out, it does, again, it's kind of like a muscle where you kind of build on it, but it doesn't last really forever as intense as it was when I got home, obviously. But I really think, for anybody that's really interested in like, you know, backpacking, through hiking or anything like that, and is interested in having more gratitude in their life, that is a speed highway to get there real fast, you know?
Yep.
And as far as like the adaptability, like I was kind of saying, it's just helped me to really just learn how to adapt and overcome. And that's something that you have to do in ultra marathons too, is it's really comes down to both through hiking and ultras, is like, how well can you adapt? Because again, so many variables come up. You can try to account for most of them, but you know that there's going to be some that you're not accounting for. Like in the Colorado Trail this year, I got poison sumac all over my legs, like the second day, right? So I knew there was going to be some lows on trail, but I didn't know that I was going to be itching my face off and my legs off every day, you know, before I go to sleep. And, you know, adding that on to the mileage I was trying to do every day, it was tough. So, but you got to just adapt to it, man. It's a kind of a defining moment, you know, whether or not you can.
Yeah. It's that adversity. You know, you're going to meet that adversity. And the ultimate test, as I believe in humans, or as, you know, as workers, certainly, you know, it sounds like as a backpacker or, you know, yeah, an endurance athlete, it's how are you going to respond? Is the, yeah, the adversity is going to hit, and it's up to you to try to figure that out. So no, yeah, I love that thinking. I'm curious, you're talking a little bit about, you know, folks who might be listening here. I'd love to hear, what advice would you give with someone who's into the outdoors and being active, but might be a little intimidated with the idea of, you know, 30 days on the Colorado Trail or on, yeah, any trail, or the, yeah, idea of running a marathon plus, you know, on a trail. So like, what advice would you give to someone when they're like, I'm into it, but man, that sounds really intimidating, Chad.
Yeah. For me, I'm all about graduated practice. So I never started at like the hardest thing ever, you know, like I started running 5Ks like several years ago and, you know, 10, it was literally like a ladder, 5K, 10K, you know, half. And then I skipped the actual official marathon and then just went to a 50K. But it's really, for me, yeah, it's about graduated practice, I think. Same with hiking. People ask me like, you know, how do you hike solo all the time? Like, aren't you scared like overnight? And like, hell yeah. Like I used to be super scared staying overnight by myself, you know, but you know, I started by camping next to my car one time at a campground just by myself. Once you wake up from that and you don't go home, you feel like you could take on the world. It's just such a great feeling because you got over some of those demons that are trying to get you to go back home, you know? And then, yeah, I think it's just get started. And if you can, find a mentor, because that is going to accelerate your learning tenfold. And a lot of times with hiking and ultra running, you're going to be on similar trails. Like both things are on similar trails, right? Like you can run a trail, you can hike a trail. But I've met so many people just hiking, just backpacking, and just trail running that have the same, that kind of like-minded mind. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they have a different skill set than I do in something, or they have more experience. And so just hanging with them is priceless, I think, in my mind.
Yeah. Love it. And I want to come back to this idea of mentorship, and cause I think that's so important for so many of us, but I want to maybe turn back the clock a little bit here. Right. So obviously you're now in Oregon doing what I think most people would say like pretty extreme, pretty, you know, adventurous, aggressive things outdoors, which I personally love. But I want to go back. So you grew up in Wisconsin, and you found your way out to the Pacific Northwest. So what was that journey like, and how did you start to get into things, a little bit, particularly on the trail?
Yeah, that's a good question. So yeah, obviously, you know, we took some snowboarding trips out west when I was in college. Basically, I fell in love with the West at that point. After college, I graduated, moved out here with an ex-girlfriend, but, you know, it was a girlfriend at the time, whatever. Didn't work out. Anyway, and so, yeah, my big thing back then was I wanted to do backpack hunting. I would watch Primos and, you know, all this stuff, right? And I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is so cool. But I didn't know anything about trail systems. Like when I first got to Oregon, I would bomb out to the backcountry and I wouldn't even hike on trail. Like I didn't even know really trails kind of I don't know what I was thinking. There was no All Trails app. There was no apps, like there was no Onyx maps. There was nothing like that.
Just drive to the mountains and start walking, right?
Dude, that's exactly what I was doing. I was like, man, this is pretty tough. You know, you're bushwhacking places and like, wow, dude, this is, I don't know how people are doing this. You know, how are people? And so, yeah, like that kind of transitioned into, I was more of in a hunting phase at that point. I wasn't so much into the backpacking. And then kind of in 2016, I actually started jujitsu. And when I started jujitsu, I did that. That was kind of another launch pad that kind of, for one reason or another, once I started that, I cleaned up my life a lot.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Why was it that you started jujitsu in the first place? Like what was that like the very first day you went to on a mat? Because my understanding of jujitsu is you kind of get your ass kicked for a while until you start getting to be decent. And it's tough to get started in jujitsu.
You're so, there was a meme that when I was first starting training, it was like the first 6 months of jujitsu is like, and there's like this guy with his head in the pool, like from the top or whatever, you know, cause you're like drowning. You're like seriously drowning in people because you don't know anything and you're just getting just worked. Right. And so what actually happened was I went out to Eastern Oregon, long ass drive. I had a miserable time. I went home early. I was when I was younger, I would always plan on doing like a 5-day thing. I'd always leave on day two because I'd get lonely or whatever. I didn't have that mental muscle at that point. And so I'm driving home and I was talking to a buddy from Wisconsin. He was talking about how he rode his bike from, I think, Madison to the border of Wisconsin or something. I don't know, some kind of crazy stuff. And I was like, dang, that's pretty cool, you know? And I was like, hunting really isn't working out for me right now. What is something that I can do that would make me proud of myself, you know? And there's a jiu-jitsu dojo down the street. I was like, there's no excuse why I can't do this. I've always wanted to do it. Yeah, so I go in there, you know, and got worked. I mean, I still get worked, right? But like, I got worked for, yeah, a good 6 months to a year. And you have to be someone that enjoys, in a weird way, getting just beat. I don't know, like, what else to say, because, but you got, I always thought, like, you know, I'm, at least I'm getting more training than the people that aren't training. You know what I mean? At least I know what's going, you know, at least I know how I'm going to respond. And so from then on, I fell in love with jiu-jitsu. I still do it to this day. I'm trying to get my purple belt, which hopefully will come this year, I hope. But yeah, so but the weird thing about jiu-jitsu is that I started doing jiu-jitsu for like 2016. I did it for that summer, and I was doing so much jiu-jitsu, I didn't do any backpacking or anything outside for a whole summer. And so winter came and I was like, wow, I didn't do anything with my summer, right? So that next year I started planning more stuff. I started getting more into backpacking and stuff. And that was a big thing for me too, is I started prioritizing my summers. And so like months before summer would come, I would block out weekends, I would block out weeks, and I would write down, I'm going to backpack here. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And just that simple act of blocking stuff out, writing it down, I would adhere to that even when people would try to invite me somewhere else. And again, it just kind of creates that launch pad for doing bigger stuff, more extreme stuff. And so, yeah, it was kind of weird how that worked out, I guess. But yeah, that's what I do to this day still.
No, there's so much power in that, which is just being purposeful and thoughtful for where you spend your time. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Just the act of saying, okay, I'm disappointed with how things went last summer in terms of me being outside in nature, which is obviously something that's super important to you. So I'm going to put on my calendar and I'm going to honor that, you know, that I'm going to honor myself in that need for that time. And then yep. I'm just going to go after it and do it. And I think yep. too many of us wind up getting caught in this. Sometimes it's day to day, hour to hour, you know, week to week, month to month, whatever it is, we're just like letting life happen to us as opposed to being 100%. Like, hey, what is it I'm going to do? I mean, I know I've, you know, caught myself. I'm not proud of this, but you catch yourself suddenly like watching garbage on TV. And then 10 minutes, you're like, what am I doing? Like, I don't want to watch this. I am not interested in this at all. I just 100%. Shut it off and keep going. But, you know, on a macro sense of life, I mean, you doing this obviously was a pretty big deal in terms of inspiring yourself, motivating yourself, like finding that self definition in terms of who you are. And that's really, yes. really powerful.
Yes. Yep. So yep. No, that's a great point. Yep.
Yeah. My understanding though is, so when you're rolling doing jiu-jitsu, you actually had a bicep injury and that's something that sparked your interest and then getting more into ultra marathoning. So how did that happen?
What's yeah. That yeah. This is a great story too. So yeah, dude, you know, we're COVID rolling at the time. So we're training underground in people's base, but we're actually in a hayloft at this point. This is pretty, you know, Midwest stuff. We're in a hayloft and, you know, we had mats, but at the end of the round, I wasn't rolling that well. I was overtraining because I was going through a breakup. So I was using that as a lot of fuel of just really just grinding to the bone. Right. And so I'm in this role. This purple belt had tapped me out a little bit earlier. I was really not satisfied with my performance. We get to the end of the round. We have about 5 seconds left. He throws up a triangle. The triangle was loose, and so I'm trying to posture out of it. But in the process, he pulled my arm down. And with 2 seconds left on the board, I thought I could pull it out, and it just went pop, pop, pop. and then the bell goes off. And this is all on video too. And I immediately knew it was screwed up. And yeah, I tore the bicep, basically from where it attaches down to your elbow. I had to wait 3 weeks for surgery. Cause I was actually, incidentally, I always seem to get significantly hurt before I fly home to Wisconsin, which I injured my knee in jiu-jitsu, same thing, like 3 years ago. And so I fly home, I fly back, I get the surgery. And at this point I'm in a sling, I can't do jiu-jitsu. And I'm like, well, screw it. I have my trail legs, which is just a term for, you know, fit legs from the JMT, the John Muir Trail that I did a couple months prior. I still have those. I've been running a little bit. There's a 50K in about a month and a half, 31 miles. And I was like, I called some of the people that have done these types of things before. I said, do you think I can do this? Do you, you know, get some feedback. They said, hell yeah, you know, start, you know, just do what you can. So I did what I could. I actually have some videos of me just running in a sling, which I actually kind of think was cheating because it was actually taking some of the slack out of your arm. But yeah, so I basically trail ran all of November, being really careful not to slip and fall on my arm, and, you know, didn't tell my doctor about this at all. And so, yeah, I tried to put a good thing where a bad thing was, right? Like I have this book that I always read when I'm going through, it seems like any type of injury or something. It's called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. It's a good stoic book. And one of the things in there was like, you know, never waste a good crisis. And so I was like, okay, well, how can I make this good? You know? And so, yeah. So in December, early December, I just ended up running like 50K and completed it, cramped up a lot, learned a lot though, running it. And yeah, it was awesome. It was really cool. It was actually the same 50K that Cameron Haynes and David Goggins ran the year prior. It's actually where Cam lives. So I don't know if you know them, but yeah. So
that's fascinating. What a great story. So when it comes to ultramarathon, I got a really hard hitting question here for you. And that's something that anyone who's ran distance and is listening, it's got to be running through their mind. And that is simple. How do you manage the chafing, Chad?
Such a good question, dude. Well, actually, I don't think I have it in one of these boxes right here, but Body Glide. It's this stuff. You can get it off of Amazon. Body Glide, you got it. Just got to lube up. I always chafe between my thighs. That's always where I chafe, is between the thighs. I really don't chafe anywhere else. And if I don't do that for a run that's over about 22 miles or so, I always chafe. I don't know what it is, but anything below that, I'm good. But beyond that, do the Body Glide. I love it. It's good stuff. The first ever long distance hike I did, which was just like 100 miles, was saved by Body Glide. I didn't think I was going to complete it because my thighs were chafed up so bad, but put it on the night, woke up, was perfect, ready to go. Definitely recommend.
Love it. Okay, so you talked about running these long races. So you ran the 50 miler, the 50K to start. So when you're actually running an ultra marathon, I mean, what's your strategy as you're starting the race and as you continue to go through all 31.1 miles or whatever the case may be upwards from there?
Well, you don't want to, at least for me, because I'm not like one of those elite runners, right? Like I got to make sure I throttle back. You definitely don't want to start out too hard. I've seen many people that have started out way hard and they're not in it by the, you know, by midway through the race, they already DNF because they already burnt themselves out or, you know, or they got injured or something like that. So you right. definitely have to pace yourself. You also have to know that, you know, you got to know what you like to eat, because when you get to these aid stations, nothing really looks good. And solid foods are hard to digest, but then you're eating like these goos all the time that just, you know, are like these like, whatever, you know, so you're getting sick of those. You also got to account for your stomach might go south which just simply means like it just starts cramping up because it's like, you know, all the blood isn't going to the digestive system. And so you want to make sure like, well, one, you want to make sure you know what's at the aid stations before you get out there. So you know what to grab. You want to get in and out of those super fast. Like that's probably the biggest thing that'll kill your time is if is milling around at aid stations. The second thing is if your stomach starts going south, you got to know, you got to grab the ginger ale 100%. It'll remedy it right up. I don't know why, but it does. It does. So I would say, yeah, really pace yourself, especially from the beginning. I would say towards the end, you can let loose a little bit more, start going a little bit faster because you're probably going to finish and you're getting pulled in by that finish line, you know? And then really get in and out of those aid stations as fast as possible. Just don't screw around there. Another thing is too, is like, for me, I don't like to sit down because if I do, I start getting cold. I start kind of cramping up a little bit. Another thing too, is make sure you're taking your salt tabs and electrolytes at least every 45 minutes to prevent cramping. Big thing there too.
So for you, how important is the race versus the journey?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because when you do this training block, so for my 50 miler, I trained from end of middle of January all the way to I ran in June 12th. So I ran for, yeah, like 6 months, right? So you're running for all these months and then you get to the race. But if you look at the percentage of the hours that you've spent, the race is only accounts for like 2%, you know, or something like that. Like, I mean, hardly anything. I mean, you're almost 95% done with the entire thing by the time you get to the race, you know? So it's like 5% of the entire thing. And so, the journey for me is really just, yeah. Obviously more important. It's just really overcoming all those demons to get to that starting line in the first place and to finish it. The race obviously is super important too, because if I don't finish that, I kind of feel like maybe I tossed something, you know, I kind of ruined or kind of wasted stuff. But I think in the journey, you definitely find out a lot about yourself because it simulates a race and the fact that you're going to have highs and lows in training. You're going to have highs and lows in your race. How do you get past those? Are you going to use what you learned in your training period and your training blocks to, you know, get past those? It's a good skill that I've used. You definitely know if you get to the race and you haven't trained, you can tell that, you can see people that have not trained, right? Or on through hikes, you can tell people that have literally just got off the couch and they started through hiking. And for me, I want to have the best experience possible. So yeah, I try to make it as good as I can in that prep phase. And it excites me. I like having that prep phase. It's fun.
Oh yeah. That's gotta be 95% of the fun since it's 95% of the time, right?
It is. And like the whole time you have a goal, right? Like you have a goal that you're striving for every day. So like it's easier than if you're just running to maintain something or whatever. It's like, it's nice to have that goal that you're thinking about the whole time. So yeah.
So what have you learned throughout this process about yourself and how has that maybe evolved where you see yourself going in the future as well?
So I would say with the ultra marathon and the 50 miler or in the 50 miler and the 50K, that was like acutely like the hardest thing I've done in like one day, right? Like the 50 miler was definitely the hardest thing I've done in a day.
Yep.
I would say as far as hardest thing I've ever done was definitely the Colorado Trail and the John Muir Trail. And I think what I learned from those is, and it's because it's such a durational thing. It's simply the duration. You wake up this large goal, 500 miles, and you wake up on day two and you have 470 left. And you're like, wow. So some things that I've learned just from the JMT and the CT specifically were, you can always do more than you think. There's always going to be a low spot in what you're doing, no matter if it's business or if it's, you know, training for this, or when you're actually in it. But how, again, how you adapt, how you respond to that is going to be that defining moment. But everybody gets there. Like, you are going to have that low spot. And so knowing that, really kind of taking that into my life, and know, you know, especially when I get into, you know, just regular work weeks or something like that, I'm like, I always think to myself, well, this isn't as hard as X, Y, and Z that I've done, you know? And that's very powerful, because it really isn't. And I sometimes I'll like look at people too, you know, or jujitsu, and I'll be like, you know, they haven't walked this many miles. I'll like play that, and that gives me a lot of power. And so, yeah, some of the, I think the biggest lessons I've learned really have came from through hiking, because you're out there for so freaking long, and you have so much time to think, and you have so many things that go wrong all the time, every day, you know. With the ultra, it's super hard. And I'm sure when I do this 100, it's going to be, that's going to be, I can't even imagine. Because I can't even imagine going 50 more after the first 50 I did. That's crazy. But yeah, so I'm very pumped to see what I learn in that 100. Because I think it's going to be even more extreme than obviously what I've learned so far.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier was how important, you know, mentorship is, and how when you get out on the trail, when you start actually doing things, you're going to meet like-minded people. You're going to find people who have different ideas, different approaches, or in your case, who just understand that there's hiking trails as opposed to bushwhacking through the mountains in the forest. But in all seriousness, who's been an important mentor for you along the way, and kind of what have you learned, whether that was like a small adjustment or a big adjustment?
Yeah, great question. My first ever longer hike, like I said, it was like 100 miles on the PCT. I met this guy. He was 68 years old. His trail name is Salty Dog. And I met him the first day. I was kind of like, I'm going to do this solo. I'm going to do it by myself. You know, I'm the man, blah, 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 right? This guy comes in, rolls into camp. We end up hiking the next week together. And I thought I was going to smoke this guy, right? This guy is pulling 20, 25 miles. Like, it's no problem, man. I'm 20, whatever. And I'm like, how is he doing this, right? I learned so much from that week. It was unreal. Just how efficient you can be with your pack and all this other little stuff. And I honestly don't think I would have gotten through some of those sections. In particular, it was a high snow year that year. So a lot of people were turning back from this particular section, not going through it. We decided to push through. That was the best day on trail. And I wouldn't have done that without him and his experience. Huge for me. And so we stay in contact today. I still ask him stuff, bounce ideas off of him and stuff like that. So I think honestly, he's been the biggest mentor for me. But outside of that, I really get a lot of inspiration, a lot of tips and stuff off of literally just like YouTube, Instagram, David Goggins, Cam Haynes, those guys, super inspirational to me. And I just love following them, because it really does kind of light a fire under you when you don't feel like doing something, you know?
For sure. Yeah. Well, Chad, you've been really generous with your time here today. But before you leave, just a couple of quick questions for you. So you're obviously a really positive guy. You set your mind to things, you find a way to make that happen. I love it. But on the flip side of that, there's got to be some pet peeves out of there. So what is your biggest pet peeve?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so number one, and this happened to me on right after I completed the Colorado Trail. Get up to the sign, you're in Durango, super happy. This older gal comes over. Oh, what'd you guys do? Oh, you know, it's trail Denver Durango. Oh, you guys aren't going to be able to do that when you're my age. You're going to have knee replacements and this and that. And I'm like, no, I think we're going to be good. I think you just need to take care of your body, is what I said. Everybody's kind of like looking at me like it's awkward. And I was like, what an odd thing to say to someone that just completed this big thing. She says it again later on in the conversation. And again, I addressed it directly to her. And it's just kind of an example of one of my biggest pet peeves is And I don't know if people like, they just nonchalantly do it, or if they just kind of like, they don't understand what they're doing, but they will like tell you, you can't do what you're going to do. Right. And so I hate, especially people that are older than you and that aren't like fit or don't do your lifestyle. Right. Like
right.
Someone that, like, I have people in mind that every time I, you know, they ask me what I do for the weekend, blah, 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 I did this or this. Well, you're not going to do that when it's like, well, now I'm 30 and it's like, there's people my age that can't even get out of the truck and into jujitsu practice, more or less, you know, do it. And so I really, my biggest pet peeve, and it fires me up, man, just rage, is people telling me that I can't do, that I'm going to do something, I can't do something when I get older. And then they're like that older person or whatever, but they didn't take care of their bodies in the first place. That's the biggest one. Also, group text kind of pissed me off.
Got to silence those.
Definitely got to silence the group text. Right? That was terrible, yeah.
So, all right. So obviously Salty Dog, he didn't participate in any of those pet peeves. He's more of a mentor. But what did Salty Dog call you? In other words, what is your trail name, Chad?
So I actually got a trail name on the CT, and it was Scratch. And that's because of my poison sumac. Very
perfect.
Fitting.
Perfect. Yeah. Absolutely love it. And so, what is the greatest piece of advice you've ever received?
You know, I actually, again, this is another thing on the CT. I've had my wall is kind of decorated in quotes and stuff. And I actually was kind of looking at it before we talked, but I have to say that I think the best, I was actually, again, I love talking to just people, older people that are positive and that where I want to be when I get that age. And there was some older people, I was kind of having a tough day on the CT, just talking to them. And they were saying, you know, this too shall pass, right? We're talking about thunderstorms. I was like, every day, man, like every freaking day. He's like, you just got to think this too shall pass. Well, a week later, I get caught in a thunderstorm. I'm like literally like on the border of hypothermia. It's like 6 p.m. I'm shivering and it's just pouring. And I'm just thinking, okay, like this will pass at some point, like this has to pass. Right. And so that really fired me up the rest of the CT, because I knew things weren't going to be just that bad forever. It gives you hope, which is super important, especially if you're trying to do an endurance activity, I think is that hope. So yeah, I think that's the best for me.
Yeah. Positive energy, hope, knowing that the tough times will be a thing of the past and ultimately be a memory. That's really powerful stuff. Well,
yeah,
I really appreciate you, and I'm sure our listeners really appreciate it. We appreciate you being part of the Muskox Herd, Chad. I know
love, love it.
You do a lot. You know, you were telling me earlier about some of the stuff that you were wearing on the CT, and you're a big fan, and we appreciate that. Yeah, if you guys want to, you know, browse the Muskox website or our Instagram, you are sure to find some pictures of Chad doing some really cool stuff out there.
Yes. Cool.
Well, thanks so much, Chad. We appreciate you joining us here on The Herd Has Spoken.
Love it, Brad. Thank you so much. Like I was saying, I love the Charleston on the CT. It was my goat. It was one of my favorite pieces of gear by far. So thank you. Thank you for hooking me up. And I appreciate it, man.
Well, that's it for today's episode of The Herd Has Spoken. Appreciate you listening. I want to thank Chad. Loved his lesson. I thought it was really fantastic how he started out literally not even knowing how to go backpacking on a trail, and he's turned into someone who's backpacked not only the Colorado Trail, but 100 miles of the Pacific Coast Trail and the John Muir Trail as well. So really love hearing that story of Chad. We appreciate you giving us a listen. We really appreciate you liking and reviewing the podcast. That really helps us to be able to get a little bit more traction and spread the good word about The Herd Has Spoken and about Muskox. Do yourself a favor, go to gomuskox.com and check out all the great outdoor gear that we have to help you get ready for your next adventure. Whether you're going to be hiking the Colorado Trail like Chad, or doing something a little bit more local in your neck of the woods, Muskox has got you covered. Until next time, I am your host, Bradley Hoos, here at The Herd Has Spoken.